Welcome to this deep dive, and this one is really special because it was actually requested by you.
That's right.
We're going to be exploring brain-friendly learning with Vera F. Birkenbill.
Oh, yeah. Vera Birkenbill, she is an absolutely fascinating figure in the world of education, especially when it comes to brain management and effective learning techniques.
Yeah, and you've actually provided us with quite a collection of Birkenbill's work.
I have.
We have some excerpts from her books, some articles from her website, and we're going to be diving deep into all of it.
That's right. It's going to be a deep dive into brain-friendly learning.
Now, one of the things that I found really interesting when I was kind of, glancing through some of these materials is that Birkenbill, kind of like you, struggled with traditional schooling.
Oh, she did. She found it incredibly difficult.
Yeah. So it's like she was almost wired differently. And I think that's one of the things that really draws us to her work, right?
It is. She was always searching for a better, a more natural way to learn.
Yeah. So I guess the big question is, what exactly does brain-friendly learning mean?
That is the question, isn't it?
How does it differ from those traditional methods that we all kind of, grew up with?
Right.
And can it really unlock a more effortless and enjoyable way to learn, especially when it comes to something like languages?
Well, that's what we're going to find out.
Okay, I am ready. Let's do it.
All right. Well, her own struggles with that rote learning that's, kind of the hallmark of traditional schooling really fueled her passion for finding a better way. And it was her early experiences teaching German to adults where she started to have these aha moments about effective teaching.
So she was already challenging the status quo right from the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. She was way ahead of her time.
It's amazing.
It really is. And, then she moved to the U.S. and she was exposed to mnemonics, and the whole field of brain research was really starting to take off. And that's when she really started to connect the dots between learning and neuroscience.
Oh, I can only imagine how exciting that must have been for her.
It was a pivotal time for her, for sure. She was particularly struck by Roger Sperry's research on split brain function.
Oh, right.
Which revealed how the two hemispheres of the brain specialize in different ways of processing information.
Yeah, and that has huge implications for how we understand things like language acquisition, right?
Absolutely huge implications, and it really informed her approach to teaching.
Now, this is where it gets interesting for me, because I understand that Birkenbill's ideas, they weren't immediately embraced by the education establishment, were they?
Not at all. In fact, it was the business world that first recognized the value of her methods.
Really?
Yeah. Companies were using her techniques to train employees more efficiently, more effectively.
Wow.
Boosting knowledge, retention, and engagement.
So she was getting results in a fast-paced, results-oriented environment.
Absolutely. And it really underscored the effectiveness of her brain-friendly techniques.
I love that. And it's so interesting how what started with her own practical observations teaching German, evolved over five decades into these scientifically backed methods.
Yeah, it's a real testament to her dedication and her vision.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into the specifics of how her approach works, I want to kind of understand a little bit more about those early years.
Okay.
What were some of the things about traditional education that she found so problematic?
Well, one of her biggest criticisms was the emphasis on rote memorization over genuine understanding.
Okay.
She believed that knowledge is only truly valuable when you can apply it, connect it to other concepts, use it to solve problems.
So it's not just about cramming facts into your brain.
No, not at all.
It's about weaving them into this meaningful tapestry of knowledge.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah, and she felt that traditional methods often glue words together in our minds, especially when we're learning languages.
What do you mean by that?
Well, instead of understanding the individual words, like let's say table and the Spanish word mesa,
okay,
learners would form this kind of mental hybrid table mesa.
Interesting.
Which hinders true fluency.
Yeah, it's like we get stuck in this translation loop.
Right.
Instead of thinking directly in the new language.
Exactly. And this is where her concept of decoding comes in.
Okay.
Which is the first step in her four-step method for language learning.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to dive into those four steps. But before we do, did anything in particular about those early years resonate with your own learning journey?
Oh, absolutely. What really struck me was this idea that learning should be enjoyable.
Mm.
It shouldn't be a chore.
Yeah.
And I think that's something a lot of people can relate to, especially if they struggled with traditional methods like myself.
For sure.
Birkenbill was adamant that when we align our learning methods with the way our brains are naturally wired, learning becomes effortless and enjoyable.
Right.
It's no longer about forcing information in. It's about creating the right conditions for it to flow naturally.
It's like we're unlocking the hidden potential of our brains.
Precisely. And it's fascinating to see how her methods were initially shaped by her own personal challenges and observations long before she delved deeply into the science of learning.
Yeah, and so ahead of her time?
Absolutely.
Well, now I'm even more eager to unpack those four steps and see how they actually work in practice.
Me too.
Should we dive in?
Let's do it. And remember, you provided these sources, so feel free to stop us anytime if something piques your interest or sparks a question.
Yes.
We're here to make this a truly personalized exploration.
I love it. All right, let's do it.
Okay. Okay, so let's unravel those four steps, shall we?
Yes.
Starting with decoding.
Okay, decoding.
Which might sound a little counterintuitive at first.
It does a little bit. I mean, how does decoding help us learn a language more effectively? It seems like it would actually slow us down.
You would think so, right? But trust me, it's a game changer.
Okay.
Decoding involves doing a word-for-word translation of the text, not to create a perfect, polished translation,
right,
but rather to break down the language into its fundamental building blocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's about understanding the underlying structure, the DNA of the language, if you will.
So like we're getting a behind-the-scenes look at how the language is constructed. Kind of like peeking into the architect's blueprints.
I like that analogy.
Before we see the finished building.
Yeah, and Burke and Bill even suggested writing the word-for-word translation directly below the target language text.
Oh, interesting.
Creating your own personalized language map.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this could be helpful.
Yeah.
It's not about producing a flawless translation.
Yeah.
It's about understanding how the language fits together.
Exactly. Yeah. And to make it even more engaging, she recommended using photocopies and highlighters, turning it into this hands-on activity.
Oh, that's fun.
It's about active engagement, not passive reading.
So she's really tapping into that visual and kinesthetic learning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And here's a crucial point.
Okay.
Decoding is a temporary tool.
Got it.
A stepping stone.
Okay.
As you progress, you gradually rely less and less on the translation,
right,
and you start thinking directly in the target language.
It's like training wheels for your brain.
Precisely. And remember those glued words we talked about earlier? Decoding helps break those apart, freeing you from that mental translation loop.
I see.
And allowing you to think more fluidly in the new language.
So by understanding the individual components, we can actually start to internalize the language more deeply.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Okay, so what's the next step on this brain-friendly journey?
Step two is active listening.
Active listening.
Here you listen to the text while following along with your decoded translation, focusing on connecting the sounds to the meaning.
So we're starting to immerse ourselves in the sounds of the language.
Yes. But Burke and Beale stress the importance of not focusing on the spelling at this stage.
Interesting.
It's all about absorbing the sounds naturally, letting your brain make those connections organically.
It's like listening to music.
Exactly.
You don't need to analyze every note to enjoy the melody.
Precisely. And just like with music, she encouraged listeners to use the pause button liberally.
Whoa, okay.
Stopping to repeat difficult words or phrases, savoring those sounds.
So it's about becoming an active participant in the listening process.
Yeah.
Not just a passive recipient of information.
Exactly. And this active engagement primes your brain for the next step, passive listening.
Passive listening.
Mm.
Okay, now that sounds almost too good to be true.
It might sound counterintuitive, but it is incredibly effective.
Okay.
This is where you simply surround yourself with the target language while doing other activities.
Mm.
It could be anything, cooking, walking, even working out.
Oh, wow.
The key is it's in the background and you're not making any conscious effort to listen.
Wait, so I can be learning a language while I'm doing the dishes or going for a run? This is mind-blowing.
It is. It's like creating a language bath that your brain can soak in effortlessly.
I love it.
And even though you're not actively listening, your brain is still picking up those sounds and patterns, working its magic behind the scenes.
So my brain is learning on autopilot.
Exactly.
I love that. But how much passive listening is enough?
Well, Birkenville didn't specify a magic number.
What?
Her philosophy was the merrier. The more you immerse yourself, even passively, the faster those neural connections form.
So the more you surround yourself with the language, the more your brain starts to recognize it as familiar.
Yes.
And meaningful.
Exactly. And passive listening doesn't just benefit speaking skills.
Really?
It can also enhance your comprehension and even improve your pronunciation.
So it's like a multitasking language learning superpower.
It is.
I'm sold. Okay, let's talk about that final step in Burke and Bill's method.
Okay.
The one where we finally get to put all of this into practice.
Absolutely. The fourth and final step is active application.
Active application.
This is where you start speaking, reading, and writing in the target language, depending on your goals.
So this is where we transition from absorbing the language to actively expressing ourselves.
Precisely. But it's crucial to emphasize that this stage should only begin after you've completed the first three steps.
Okay.
Decoding active listening and passive listening.
Got it.
You want to ensure you have a solid foundation before you start building on it.
It's like mastering those basic moves before attempting that complex dance routine.
Exactly. Now, Birkenbill was famous for her innovative and engaging teaching methods.
Yes.
For this active application stage, one of her most renowned techniques was the chorus method.
The chorus method? I've heard about this. It sounds like fun. Can you explain how it works?
It's brilliantly simple, yet incredibly effective. You listen to the target language through headphones and speak along with the native speakers. Almost like singing in a choir.
So it's like karaoke for language learning.
You could say that. She suggested starting with the volume on your headphones high and gradually lowering it as you gain confidence.
Oh, that's clever.
It's like fading out the training wheels as you become more comfortable riding on your own.
I see how that would gradually build confidence.
Yes.
And fluency.
Exactly. And she also cautioned against recording yourself in the early stages.
Interesting.
Listening to your own early attempts at speaking could actually reinforce bad habits.
Oh, okay.
And make those mistakes more prominent in your mind.
That makes sense. It's about focusing on the ideal model.
Yes.
Not inadvertently amplifying our own early fumbles.
Precisely. It's all about training your ear to hear the correct pronunciation and intonation from the start.
Yeah.
Birkenbill had a treasure trove of other creative techniques for active application, like games, role-playing, storytelling, always emphasizing enjoyment and engagement.
It seems like fun is a key ingredient in her recipe for brain-friendly learning.
Absolutely. She believed that when learning is enjoyable, it ceases to be a chore and transforms into an exciting adventure.
I can definitely resonate with that.
Good.
So we've explored these four fascinating steps.
We have.
Decoding active listening, passive listening, and active application.
Yes.
But I'm curious, how do these steps connect back to those overarching principles of brain-friendly learning we touched on earlier?
That's a great question. If you think about it, each step is carefully designed to align with the way our brains naturally learn.
Mm-hmm.
Decoding taps into our innate pattern recognition abilities. Active and passive listening leverage the brain's remarkable capacity for auditory learning, even when we're not consciously paying attention.
Right.
And active application provides the crucial opportunity to put all those newly acquired skills into practice, solidifying those neural connections.
It's like she created a symphony of learning.
I like that.
Where each step harmonizes with the brain's natural rhythms.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it's this holistic approach that makes Birkenbill's methods so effective and enduring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're particularly interested in the impact of her work.
I am.
Especially in those countries where her methods have been more widely adopted.
Yes.
Shall we explore that next?
Let's do it. So let's talk about those countries where Birkenbill's methods have really taken root.
Okay.
Places like Austria and Switzerland.
Okay.
Where her approach has become more mainstream. What are some of the key differences we see there?
Yeah. What does it actually look like in practice?
Well, one of the most noticeable things is a real shift in classroom culture.
Mm.
Teachers are moving away from that traditional sage on the stage role.
Right.
And embracing a more student-centered approach.
So instead of just lecturing and expecting students to passively absorb information.
Exactly.
They're actively engaging them, making them participants in the learning process.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see how this shift is creating a ripple effect.
In what way?
Students are more motivated, more curious, and ultimately they're retaining information better.
It's a win-win.
It really is.
It sounds like they're finally being given the tools to learn in a way that feels natural and engaging for them.
That's the beauty of Birkenbill's approach. She always emphasized that there's no one-size-fits-all method for learning.
Right.
What works for one person may not resonate with another.
Of course.
Her methods provide a framework for teachers to create more personalized learning experiences.
I see.
That cater to the unique needs and strengths of each student.
It's about recognizing that every brain is different and every learner has their own unique style and pace.
Precisely. And by embracing this diversity, we create a more inclusive and supportive learning environment where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
I love that. Now, you mentioned earlier that her work initially faced some resistance from the more traditional educational institutions.
It did.
Why do you think that was?
Well, new ideas often face pushback, especially in fields like education.
Right.
Which can be slow to change. I think some educators were skeptical of her methods, perhaps viewing them as too radical or unorthodox. You know, there's often a reluctance to move away from established norms.
Yeah, even if those norms aren't serving everyone well.
Exactly. But Birkenbill was a persistent advocate for her ideas.
She was a pioneer.
She was, and she continuously refined her methods, backing them up with solid research. Mm. And over time, her work started to gain traction.
It's a testament to her vision and determination that her ideas have not only endured,
I agree,
but have flourished.
Absolutely. Her work continues to influence and inspire educators around the world.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to touch on one more important point. We focus primarily on Birkenbill's methods for language learning.
We have.
But I know her approach to brain-friendly learning extends far beyond languages, right?
Oh, absolutely. Her principles can be applied to any subject.
Really?
From math and science to history and the arts.
Wow.
It's all about understanding how the brain learns best and then creating learning experiences that align with those natural processes.
So it's about applying those core principles.
Yeah.
Understanding over rote memorization, making connections, engaging multiple senses.
Exactly.
To any field of study.
Yeah. For example, Birkenbill was a big proponent of making connections between new information and prior knowledge.
Right.
It's not just about stuffing our brains with facts.
Yeah.
But about weaving those facts into the fabric of our existing understanding, creating this rich tapestry of interconnected knowledge.
So it's about building bridges between what we already know and what we're trying to learn.
Yes.
Making those new concepts more meaningful and memorable.
Precisely. And she also stressed the importance of creating multisensory learning experiences.
What do you mean by that?
It's not just about reading or listening.
Okay.
It's about engaging all of our senses. Sight, sound, touch, even taste and smell if appropriate.
So instead of just passively absorbing information, we're actively experiencing it with our whole being.
Exactly. Making it more vivid and impactful.
I love that.
And another powerful technique she advocated for was storytelling. Stories have this incredible ability to capture our imagination, engage our emotions, and make information more relatable and memorable.
So it's like those stories become vessels.
Yes.
That carry those facts and concepts, making them more accessible and engaging.
Absolutely. Birkenbill believed that storytelling could transform even the most complex or abstract ideas into captivating narratives, making learning both enjoyable and impactful.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to see that her ideas are still influencing modern educational approaches, including the growing use of storytelling in classrooms and online learning environments.
It's like we're rediscovering the ancient power of storytelling as a tool for learning and growth.
Precisely. And I think that's a beautiful note to end on.
It is.
Birkenbill's work reminds us that learning should be a joyful and fulfilling adventure.
Yes.
Not a tedious chore. By embracing our natural curiosity and aligning our methods with the way our brains are wired, we can unlock our full learning potential.
Well, it has been an absolutely incredible journey exploring Birkenbill's world with you. And I especially appreciate how you've connected her ideas to my own experiences as a learner.
My pleasure.
It's been really insightful.
Always remember, you have the power to shape your own learning journey.
Yes.
Embrace those aha moments. Stay curious and never stop exploring.
That is fantastic advice. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of Vera F. Birkenbill. We hope you've gained some valuable insights and inspiration to make your own learning more brain-friendly.